Welcome to the airport lounge. Table for two, gentlemen. Right this way. Here's your booth. Have a great show.
Welcome to the Airport Lounge, the Winnipeg Jets podcast, much like a Kraken, mostly underwater. I'm Mike Guthrie, and I'm joined by my good friend and a nautical disaster in his own right, Vaughn Mitchell. How's it going, Vaughn?
Things are hot, Mike. Hot. I can't go outside because it's too hot. I can't go on social media because it's on fire. Where do I turn? There's nothing I can do.
Well played. It is hot. We just got back from a road trip. Our family, we were in a Soyuz, and that's in British Columbia for our seven American listeners. And it's just unbearably hot, and I'm not on a hot guy. But what I did learn, Vaughn, you might notice, but I, on this road trip, I realized and was told on several occasions that I have not made a correct driving decision in 8 years. Now, statistically, and on a balance of probabilities, you would think I would get one correct, but I have not, which was, everything's a learning lesson. And I my wife and I joke that if we were ever to enter the Amazing Race, we would be the first couple that would get divorced even before we got in the car.
You would have an on-air divorce. Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure that's never happened. Like, they always say that money and sex are the two things that couples fight about. Well, us is driving, and then I don't know if you've ever put together IKEA furniture with your wife, but that's the second. They should add those two to the reasons that couples don't make it.
Well, I'll tell you, Mike, you should actually be thankful that your wife was there to catch your mistakes. Because if she hadn't have been there, you wouldn't even have been knowing that you had been making these terrible driving decisions. Like, so I think the only thing left to do is to go out and buy her a gift and say thank you. Thank you for letting me know about all of my mistakes.
I know, as a single man, I was making these mistakes the whole tenure of that, and I had no idea. And so I'm very thankful and very grateful that now I have someone that can point those out for me.
So over and above the bad driving and the camping, how has the Jets detox gone for you? I mean, we've kind of been without some Winnipeg Jets stimulation for a few weeks. You've gone out, tried to return to nature. How has it gone for you?
I gotta say, the first couple days I enjoyed the reprieve, but I really quickly started to miss, and I started to troll Twitter just for any nugget of information. And we're going to get into it here in a bit, because we're ramping up to some exciting times with the expansion draft and then the real draft. But I felt like kind of a lost babe in the woods. We had been gone so hard and so fast for so long there with the Jet season, and I had sort of separation anxiety.
Yeah, I've kind of been wandering around like a zombie. I've had no real direction or original thinking, which would be even more obvious if you've read one of the articles that I've recently written, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But it's been sort of adrift for a few weeks. There hasn't been that structure. I enjoyed the soccer that was on, but I was quite pleased when we reconnected and decided to get the podcast going again and do a little bit of writing. I'm excited to restart that. I don't know. And there's other things before we get into all the challenges that the expansion draft provides our beloved Winnipeg Jets. We do have good news. We do have, yeah, I think, is some interesting news to share with our dozens and dozens of listeners.
Check-in time. So, we'll do it. We'll check in time.
We ask that you please fasten your seatbelts at this time and secure all baggage underneath your seat or in the overhead compartments. We also ask that your seats and table trays are in the upright position for takeoff.
As Vaughn alluded to, we are now a proud member of the Face Off Hockey Network, and it's a fantastic website, and it's somewhat fledgling, but they reached out to us, and they're branching out, so to speak, and have tapped the shoulders of all the NHL markets, and we are very proud to announce that we will be representing the Winnipeg Jets coverage on the site, which is very exciting.
Yeah, needless to say, it was a surprise and somewhat surreal when the Faceoff Hockey Network reached out to us. It was very flattering. And, you know, I was a little wondering and a little worried, you know, had they even listened to our podcasts, or were we benefiting from having a podcast was started with the letter A? Like they went to like the, like the yellow pages, and we were just the first Jets podcast that came up because it's the Airport Lounge. And, you know, I sure hope they don't think all those ads were real sponsors, or we'll have some explaining to do.
Yeah, no one's approached us for the mining dollars that we keep talking about. So that was my first worry too, because they're tapping a dead well if they think that's what's happening here.
Yeah, I do like their website. It's thefhn.net, not .com, but .net. It is fledgling, and that's what's part of the exciting part of it, is that hopefully we can be able to grow and create some type of brand or whatever you want to say. And you know, I know, Mike, you're in this for the love of the team, but for myself, it's just another platform where I can spread the First Mining Gold gospel and take my royalties to the next level. Gold, baby, gold.
Get that money. The other inexplicable thing is that they've allowed us again, very graciously, to do a bit of writing. So both Vaughn and I have been busy dusting off the old pen and pad, and we've posted, I think, about four articles, the sort of prevalent ones being I did one on my thoughts and feelings on Paul Maurice, and Vaughn did an excellent one on the expansion draft, which we'll discuss further today. But I love it. I find it exhilarating, and again, thank them for the opportunity to do so.
Yeah, it's really cool. Again, if you have a chance, check it out, thefhn.net. And we think our podcasts are now going to be all over the place. Maybe you could, Mike was explaining this to me earlier, and I'm not the technical guy, but we'll still be on Apple. But now we're on Spotify, and I don't know, what are we on, Clean Feed and Breakfast Camp and what are...
But just about any podcast app, Breakfast Feed, right to food, eh, buddy? And so, yeah, just about any podcast app that you can find, and that was thanks to the FHN guys. They were like, "Hey, what outlets are you on?" I was like, "Apple." And they're like, "What else?" I was like, "No, that's it. That's all I know." So they've really brought us into the 21st century. So again, yeah, if you can check it out, that would be fantastic.
Yeah, let's get to the flight plan and talk about this expansion draft. Release the
Kraken! Okay, so news dropped earlier today that the Winnipeg Jets had made their selections of those players that they were going to hold on to and protect, and then consequently, by process of elimination, those players that they were going to expose. And I'll just quickly read, I'm sure most who listen here already know this, but we're going to keep Kyle Connor, Kopp, PLD, Ehlers, Lowry, Scheifele, Wheeler, Morrissey, Pionk, Stanley, and Hellebuck. Most of these, in a previous episode, we had gone through, made some predictions. Most of the choices here are not a surprise whatsoever. I think if Twitter is any indication, and just some of the circles that we run in, whether we protect Dylan DeMello or Logan Stanley was sort of the apex of debate for Jets fans. And I know you have strong feelings, Vaughn, in terms of the decision that we made. I'm a little more wishy-washy and on the fence with it. So let's have it. What do you think?
Well, one of the articles I did for our new website covered this topic in detail, and really it took a previous conversation we had on the podcast and kind of built a little bit more detail into it. So check that out if you can. But for the most parts, it was pretty easy, and I got it right. Not because I'm smart.
I am too smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
Because I think it's pretty straightforward. First and foremost, I thought it was pretty obvious that they were going to apply the 7-3-1 format. So
right.
Seven forwards, 3D, and one goalie. And I think that's part and parcel with having a forward heavy talent rich group, that you would want to, not only do you get to protect a protected additional player using mm-hmm. that format. It sort of fits in well with the talent that we have. And then you correctly indicated the guys that we protected. Blake Wheeler, of note, he's the only one with a no move clause, which is different than a no trade clause. Okay, so Dylan DeMello has a modified no trade clause, which is different. A no move clause is included in expansion draft. A no trade clause, because we're actually not trading Dylan DeMello, doesn't apply, so it doesn't exist for
Excellent
this.
Point. Excellent point.
Yeah. So Blake Wheeler needed to be as part of that group. So all of the Galaxy Brain people out there that said, hey, let's get him to waive his no move clause and expose him, because that's a bridge too far, people. The other ones are obvious. Like, say what you want. We're protecting Scheifele. We're protecting Ehlers. We're protecting Connor. Okay. I actually, one of the first mock drafts I saw had Adam Lowry as being unprotected and selected by Seattle. I thought that was preposterous given the contract he signed, which is very team friendly.
Right.
And as I, you know, indicated in the article, all the filthy lucre that we gave up for Pierre-Luc Dubois made it very unlikely we would expose him, even though he's 1 year away from RFA status.
I saw a lot of that too. PLD sucks. We should have exposed him. It's like, all right, can we operate in reality here, please? There's no way that's happening.
So then that brings us to Andrew Kopp or Mason Appleton. And even though there's a legitimate debate there as to which guy will provide the best long-term value for the team. I liked keeping Kopp because he does so many things pretty darn well. Pretty darn well. I think he has a little bit higher view of his value than I think is the case. But hey, that's okay. But I think the key thing here was going to be where the contract negotiations were for Andrew Kopp at the moments leading up to declaring the protected list. Because if they were going well, he'd probably be protected. If they were miles apart, they'd probably be exposed, right? So with the fact that he was protected, well, that sure suggests that they're close enough that Andrew Kopp's going to be a Winnipeg Jet next year and for several years to come. So I batted 1,000 on the forwards. And then in the next sentences in the article, I made a very, very strong case or strong statement. And let me say this. As for the three defenders, I made the right selections, but unfortunately the Jets did not.
There it is.
So, yes, Morrissey and Pionk were on my list. And then I used some strong language about the soundness of mine that was required for the last selection. I said that if we didn't protect DeMello, it would be insane. So, but you know, I'll turn it over back to you, you know, very quickly, Mike, but I thought I need to move more into the agnostic camp on this one, because this is a debate that is really tearing Jets fandom apart. And
it is. Yeah.
It's grown to a level that is more, you know, it's more destructive than actually losing Dylan DeMello. You know, I thought it was insane to consider protecting the very tall Logan Stanley over the effective but unspectacular Dylan DeMello. But you know what? Here we are, trapped in a post-apocalyptic zombie dystopia where it makes more sense to protect Logan Stanley than not Dylan DeMello. someone isn't eating enough brains. But, but you know, I need to just soak it all in and relax and go put my feet in you know, the wading pool in my backyard and relax. I mean, I do think the next week is going to be a little bit nerve-wracking, but what are your thoughts, Mike?
I thought, and one thing, like, you referenced the very tall Logan Stanley, and Logan Stanley's still young. Like, he can still grow another 2 inches.
And
because apparently height without any context or reference is a skill. That is the one thing about Stanley. Well, he's really tall. Well, congratulations. A lot of people are really tall. It's not a hockey quality. It can be very useful if you use it correctly. Anyway, I digress. The one thing about the Wheeler, I did see a lot of discourse about, and quite honestly, you know, we've had a lot of conversations about Blake Wheeler. I've let my feelings be known. And Carey Price exposing himself the way he did and sort of the drama that unfolded in that regard led Jets fan Twitter to pile onto it. And I was like, can we all please, again, be realistic? Wheeler's not waiving this. It would be great and ideal, but let's operate in a nonfiction world, right? Because it's not gonna happen. And I, less so than you, or less so or more so, however you want to put it, I see merits to both sides. And quite honestly, that's unusual for me. I'm like you now, where I'm like, okay, the advanced analytics folks and those who are heavily predisposed to making hockey decisions based on advanced analytics are up in arms. And I get it. I've poured through the evolving hockey and top-down hockey, and there's a very clear and, to me, concise breakdown of DeMello's value to the Jets, what he means for Josh Morrissey and his play, because Josh Morrissey was subpar throughout the year, and his best games throughout this regular season and even to the playoffs were with DeMello. And I understand that DeMello is not flashy, he's not fast, he doesn't score a lot of goals, but he makes a lot of really good hockey decisions. Logan Stanley, on the other hand, is flashy. He's big, he'll lay some guys out once in a while, he'll score some nice goals, he makes some nice post checks, but sometimes he's really bad defensively. And a lot of people had indicated, and this is where this goes beyond my hockey breadth, where I do hear a lot that he played sheltered minutes, and I understand it when you play on the third pair that you're often playing against a team's worst forwards, and he didn't play a lot. When he did, he got to play with the best defenseman that sort of guided him along. Our buddy Rich made a good point where I don't think we utilized him correctly for a large portion of the year, and I like upside. I like potential. Whether he obtains that, and statistically, it sounds like there's a probably low probability that he will, but I don't mind it, at least to the extent that's being espoused on some of the hockey forums, because people are mad.
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!
Well, I think certainly what's factoring into this is the uncertainty. And I think just as human beings, we don't deal with uncertainty very well. And, you know, there's that theory that the intensity involved in a debate is an exact inverse relationship to the importance of the debate. So people are really, really passionate about this. And, you know, for me, I want to stress, I like both of the players. And it's a bit of a false dichotomy we've set up because, you know, to pick one camp or the other, I'm in both of their camps. My only point is I don't think we should protect Stanley at the expense of DeMello, right? We need to have some type of, which is still on the table, have some type of deal, have some type of arrangement where they're both can be kept. And the only question, it's a two-part question, is what is Seattle asking for that to happen? And is that price reasonable from our perspective? Because if they feel it's okay that they feel this strongly about Stanley, I have a few more points to make about that in terms of our depth. And, you know, I don't know why we're protecting a left side guy instead of a right side guy. But before we get into that, I want to say perception is reality, but it's not always the truth. You know, when you're in an organization, you know your personnel and their warts better than anyone else. Everyone else sees your guys or your people the same way you do. So just because we see something one way, there's no guarantee that others will see it the same way. Now, the bridge in that divide is the analytics, right? In that, you know, maybe there are things that we don't see about Logan Stanley that we should value more. And maybe there are things about Dylan DeMello that we don't see that we would think less of him if we knew of, right? But all of these analytics or advanced statistics people, they all can't be wrong. And there's not diversity amongst their, you know,
no, opinions. It's pretty uniform.
It's pretty uniform, right? Mm-hmm. So my point is this. There may be more merit to what this is than we can see. And just because he's exposed isn't a guarantee that Seattle will take him. Just because that's what we think, knowing our players, that that's the most logical thing to do. Maybe Seattle looks at the totality of what's available and says, you know, the way we maximize our value over and across all forwards, all defensemen, and all goalies is Mason Hamilton, right? Because, you know, yeah, you take a look.
Can't rule it out.
Can't rule it out. You know, you take a look at some of the guys that the Kraken could pick up. There's, for example, a Mark Giordano, a Jake Gardner, a Nikita Zadorov, PK Subban, Vince Dunn. I think Dylan DeMello fits in well within that group in the sense that he's as effective and as good a defenseman as those guys. But, you know, there are some pretty notable names out there that they could value more than, like, for example, Dylan DeMello makes, I think it's $3 million.
$3 million.
Right. So and they'll look at their depth chart and they'll say, okay, he is one of the top six. We have him as ranked in the top six available guys, but do we want to be paying our third pair right D? Because there's two other. I'm just saying, I don't know that's the case, but maybe if there are two other guys that are better than Dylan DeMello and he would end up being their third pairing right D, do they want to be paying their third pairing right D $3 million?
My one worry is that. Anyway, all reports indicate that the Kraken have hired quite an extensive analytics team, heavily so, and DeMello is that, right? He's an analytic darling. Watching him from game to game, you might not even know that he's out there, but the analytics guys love him. And my worry, again, some of the guys like Dunn and Giordano, like, they also have their war stats and, you know, some of the sabermetrics are also really highly regarded. So you're absolutely right. I do agree with you that there is a chance that, again, if we don't make a deal or don't try to protect him in some way through some negotiation with the Kraken, they might just pass on him. Or, like you said, they might take Appleton, because Appleton is a, you know, somewhat of a burgeoning young player who has some positive attributes, who you can pay virtually nothing, and they have a lot of decisions to make. One of which being Carey Price. Are they going to pay him $10+ million? Right. I think Montreal bet that they weren't going to do that, whether it's posturing or not, but that might be a possibility. That obviously cuts into your cap. And I think the other thing working against Stanley to a certain extent is the residual cost of him in terms of, you know, ostensibly we gave up sort of the 21st and 37th pick to get him. And then if we have to put in assets to keep DeMello, that's a lot of, you know, that's a lot of equity to put into a player who's been kind of mired down in the minors for years. And really this is up until just the end of the season and then into the playoffs shown any flashes of competency. And right. So you're right. It's that is uncertain. And I'm not a big fan or proponent of uncertainty. Right. And so I get it. We have probably a 2-3 year window. That's in my estimation with goaltending and our sort of aging forward core. And probably the more prudent move is to protect DeMello because you know what he is. You've got him locked in for 3 years. And if you want to protect Stanley, you can do that in other means. And someone might not value him the way that you do internally, because he just, nobody probably knows him. I mean, I say that facetiously. They're professional hockey scouts and analytics that, of course, they know everybody. But I do get that part of the argument, right? And DeMello's absence in the Montreal final was noticeable.
And catastrophic.
You and I and our friends.
Apocalyptic.
Had a back and forth about whether or not. And you trolled me or catfished me into heaping praise on Mark Scheifele. Kudos to you. Well played, sir. But it, you know, because both Scheifele and DeMello are out, you can never evaluate in a vacuum the respective loss of either. But I'm not gonna lie, it was brutal back there without DeMello. And so again, I get it, but I do know that Stanley's exciting, and if he improves by 25%, you've I mean, justification is a strong word, but you got to swing for the fences sometimes, and I think that's what we've done to a certain extent here. Again, I think at the end of the day, we've got other holes and other play. You know, read my Paul Maurice article. There's our first step. Yeah, yeah. So again, I'm not going to lose a ton of sleep over this.
You know, Mike, I wonder if that's not the play. The play is that even though DeMelo is more valuable, that, you know, like maybe we should start cheering for the Kraken to take Carey Price, because then that affects then at that point, with Carey Price eating up that much of their cap space, a guy like Logan Stanley looks a lot better with his under $1 million cap hit. Dylan DeMelo does at $3 million. If they select Carey Price, they probably can't afford to be pairing their third pairing. Now, let's face it. I don't think Dylan DeMelo easily fits in anywhere in your top pair, with an exception of a place like Winnipeg, where he seems to fit with Josh Morrissey. Mm-hmm. He doesn't carry. He is truly a defensive guy. He can move the puck out of his zone, but he brings no true offensive threat like a Pionk does, right? A Pionk is a much more dynamic player, whereas, you know, DeMelo is that quiet player that prevents plays against his team because he's in the right place, he's breaking up plays. You know, he does so many quiet things well that you tend not to notice him out there, but he's not contributing on the offensive end. So, again, he's not going to naturally fit in a top pair in any team, usually, like, you know, and probably not in the expansion team. They're going to be able to get a PK Subban, you know, potentially, or someone with a much more offensive upside to play in that top or second pair. And if his skills are naturally more suited to a second, like a number four defenseman or a five or six, you know, he's in that unique sweet spot with Winnipeg where he seems to have met a nice pairing with a guy that I think our organization still has some faith in.
Hey, found his lobster.
He found his lobster, right?
See? He's her lobster.
And, you know, there a certain degree of this, of managing this, is rolling some dice. If the Kraken are asking for a first-round pick in order to not select Dylan DeMelo, maybe you just have to roll the dice and say, go for it. Because at some point, they're going to have to become cap compliant. And if they select Carey Price, it's not going to be with Dylan DeMelo playing on their third pair, making $3 million a year.
No. And can I say, just a bit of a side tangent, if I'm talking about my dream job, being the GM of an expansion NHL team, do you know how fun that, I mean, high pressure, lots of balls in the air, but being able to basically survey the league and handpick players based on salaries and cap amounts, and then being able to negotiate with all the other teams in the league, because, you know, the Kraken hold position of power with everyone else in the league to a certain extent. And for me, that's a dream position. And I, the second part to that is that, you know, I went back and looked at what the rules were in 2000 for the expansion draft and the 1999 with the Thrashers, because I just didn't recall. And I was like, was it much different? And it wasn't. I mean, slight modifications to the 7-3-1 and 4-4 sort of format, but mostly the same. And I guess, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights, and again, I'm no math major, but a sample size of one is pretty small. But their success is, it bugs me to a certain extent, because they keep beating us, and they're exempt from this. And I just look at the pool of players that are exposed now. And again, I don't know shit. But I look at that, I'm like, I could put together a really competitive team right out the gate with these guys and this salary cap. Like, this is set up. And, you know, it probably speaks to the sort of the breadth of talent within the NHL in general. Mm-hmm. But I just look at it, and I'm like, gone are the days to me where you start an expansion team and you're just going to suck for 2-3 years.
Yeah.
Like, again, it could happen, but I put the odds on the Kraken being pretty competitive right away. And especially you look at, like, Vegas and Montreal. Those teams aren't laden with talent. They assembled good rosters with good coaching, and they've they've managed to have a lot of playoff success. And with that formula and the players that are available, I don't see any impediments other than internal impediments for the Kraken to get their guys and be competitive. Anyway, sorry, that's a bit of a side tangent. I was just thinking about it today. I was like, man, like, not a bad setup to be an expansion draft team.
Well, I think you're missing one thing. And the standard has been set, and it's an impossible standard. The Vegas Golden Knights made the Stanley Cup final in their first year. So your owners who don't like, let's talk about the Seattle owners now. They've shelled out whatever it was, $600 million for their new team. They looked at what happened in Vegas.
Vegas, baby, Vegas!
And these people are, they have a vision for the future, and they didn't get to be billionaires by accident, right? It's not because they've invented something that everyone has in their home, right? They're just, they just push, deal, and, you know, they must have some incredibly high expectations as to what their $600 million investment is going to provide back to them. You know, they want early and substantial returns. So in that regard, because this impossible standard has been met only just a few, only a few years ago, I think that's where the stress would come in. I think that what Vegas went through would have been very much what you described. But I think with them having, you know, established that impossible standard, that there's a lot of internal expectations from ownership to return, yep, to provide returns very quickly and very substantially. And I think that would keep me up at night for sure.
No, and that's fair. I got to ask, do you think that we have a trade brewing? Like, do you think, you know, balance of probabilities again, that is, because, you know, you've heard some rumors that Appleton,
right,
trades are brewing, and some of, you know, leads to a bit of speculation that maybe we're looking to move someone so that we don't fully expose DeMello as part of this whole thing.
Well, one of the things that I know that happens in the NFL is there's a lot of mis and disinformation that is put out there ahead of of the NFL draft, and it's specifically intended to muddy the waters and to be false flags and to create confusion out there. So, you know, a guy isn't traded until he's traded. So you could call around. Like, you may have no intention of trading Mason Appleton, but you, for whatever reason, and I don't know what that reason would be off the top of my head, you make some calls and saying, hey, we're trying to move Appleton. What would you give us for him? You're never going to, you know, accept, you know, any deal, but you're just trying to tilt the market in a direction that either confuses your opponents or tilts it back in your favor, or creates a perception that helps your strategic outcome or what you want to see come of this. So I don't know how much of that has sort of seeped its way into the NHL and how they do those things, but this is exactly the type of platform and format that I think that type of thing, that you would make those false calls out there. Do I think that there's something in place? The Jets are particularly tight-lipped, so it's impossible to read the tea leaves on this. I think they will. As I wrote in my article, I felt that Chevy did a fantastic job in advance of the Vegas expansion draft in protecting what was a pretty good roster. And what happened after that expansion draft was the best season in Jets history. We had 52 wins, 114 points. We were second overall in the NHL at the end of the season.
Yeah, it was an crazy. Amazing season. Yeah.
It's crazy. And what all kicked it off was protecting the roster. He made a deal. We moved down in the first round. A lot has been made about, oh, you know, we gave up this guy for that guy, da 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 da. You know, there's no guarantee if we hadn't have done that, we would have picked the right guy anyways.
There is a lot of that. Anytime there's a conversation about, oh, we moved down, we could have had this guy, it's, you generally cherry pick the best person in the gap between where you moved down, and the odds that you would have picked that guy, especially late in first rounds, is pretty minute. Yeah.
So the playbook has been set, is my point. I think that I think universal. I don't know who looks at what we did in advance of the Vegas expansion draft and says, you did it wrong. I think we did it exactly right, because you look at what it protected and what the results were the next year. We were arguably the best team in the NHL, right? Now, I'm not saying that we're going to be the best team in the NHL next year, but I'm saying losing Dylan DeMello makes our job infinitely better. First of all, we're not as good. I don't think anyone can dispute that. We are not as good a hockey team if we lose Dylan DeMello in this draft. And then if we need to go out there, you know, it's tough for us to get guys to come here. It is true. So we're not going to be able to sign high-end. Like this Dougie Hamilton stuff, give me a break.
Yeah, I saw a lot of that.
He's not coming. He is, you could offer that guy $100 million a year. He's not coming to Winnipeg. And that's okay. Like every market has its warts and whatever. But, you know, we're not going to get a high-value UFA to sign here. That means we're going to have to, you know, get a trade. We're gonna, and a lot of top guys that we want to come in and fill that role, whether it be exactly like what DeMello does or with a little bit more offensive flair, it's going to be costly. And we've already given, you know, I do think, you know, the playbook has been set. And I do think that the Jets will do everything in their power to protect this roster within reason. And there has been some scuttlebutt out there that Seattle's asking price to, you know, to don't take this player but select this player and we'll give you something is extremely high, as high as a first-round pick.
First-rounders, yep.
So we'll see if that holds. We'll see if that holds. This is kind of 3D chess in a way. I will give them that in the sense that, you know, just a little thing like Carey Price becoming available, that can change the entire board all the way through, right? Because there's a ripple effect. You can't just go to your analytics crew and say, who are the, you know, 12 best forwards, the six best defensemen and the top two goalies who, that measure well, because you have to manage the salary cap, you know, both now, like our
future,
you know, all the, exactly. So there's a lot of variables at play, and it's going to be interesting to see how they play out. And listen, as Mike Tyson said, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. So we'll see, We'll see how this goes for Seattle and you know, whether their plan as they want to see it unfold. Maybe they want to build around the back end. Maybe they want to build forward. So they're going to, you know, you've quite rightly on a number of things said, well, a number of podcasts alluded to the fact that, well, this team has, you know, 68% of their cap on forwards, and this team has 42% of the cap. So what is their internal allocation in that regard? So I think there's a lot of factors at play, and I don't think it's simply a lock to say Seattle is invested in analytics, therefore Dylan DeMello is going because he's an analytics darling. I think that is a valid but incomplete assessment.
Right, and part of it is we don't know, and a lot of times I think people act as if they do. And I understand, I heard the same things about them asking exorbitant prices for side deals. But I was surprised. Mike Tyson has your ear on that one. A lot of people quote philosophers, but I'm glad we're sticking with the true geniuses of our generation.
And just to be clear, Mike, you were speaking metaphorically because Mike has been known to bite someone's ear off. So
that's why
he says,
I love you, Vaughn. I knew you were going to get that one.
You.
I knew you were going to land that, to use an airplane reference. Good stuff. The one, I don't have anything further to any, but the one thing I was thinking of is I think Pionk gets some leverage out of this. We'll see how things shake out, but if we do lose DeMello, I'm sure Pionk's agent has taken some white out to some numbers and will try to probably shoot for the stars on that, because DeMello's absence makes Pionk's presence even more necessary. And we might probably have to overpay him a bit, which obviously you don't want to overpay anyone. And I'm really concerned, because I agree with you. I think Kopp values himself in the, and we've referenced it back and forth, you and I, that he should be paid as much as Lowry, because I think Lowry is just as valuable as he is. But I think the market might see differently because he had a bit of a, I would say goal scoring luck this year. And so, you know, he did it at the right time, and congratulations, go get your money. But that's my worry, because I do, you know, my first thought was like, okay, we need to take the Stastny and Perreault money and go get another sort of top four defenseman. But once you get through all the negotiations that remain, and the excellent point that you made where it's like, we just don't get those guys, right? And for better or worse, we should all resign ourselves to the fact that we're not in the high-profile free agency market. It sucks, but it's just where we're at.
Yeah, I agree. And I for one, I'm okay with Neil Pionk getting paid. I mean, he came in here and there was a lot of kind of negativity like around because he hadn't played well in New York, right? So there was some skepticism, and he's really allayed those fears and come in and played really well for us. I think we need to reward him not only with a new contract, but with someone like with a partner, a defense partner that's actually an NHL player. I think that would be, you know, and you know, for some, I was thinking about this today, how little chemistry Morrissey and him have, but I do like them on different units. I'm not scared. I think there's going to be enough cap room to sign both those guys. I don't think you can justify paying Andrew Kopp one penny more than Adam Lowry. I don't know what he does. I mean, it was a shortened season and he had one 4-goal game, which is a statistical outlier. Now, right. If you take that one game out and extrapolate it over 82 games, you know, I don't think it's as, you know, impressive as what, you know, this shortened
and
season
such a stark suggested. Contrast, yeah, and such a stark contract between him and Lowry.
Yeah, you know, Mike, I know we're getting towards the end, but I want to say this. I think this is going to be a critical offseason for the Jets, and I don't think there's any hyperbole there. I think really what we're seeing now is the Jets are going to need to decide whether this is the end of the beginning or the beginning of the end. And here's what I mean by that. If it's the end of the beginning, right, we got to make some aggressive and positive roster moves and say now is the time. Okay, everything up until this point has been the beginning, but now it's time to win. Or is it the beginning of the end? Are we starting to close a chapter? Like, if we're just going to, you know, continue to tread water in the sea of mediocrity, then, you know, okay, that's going to be apparent in whether they make these moves or not. And, and you know, we're just going to go through the motions kind of thing. We're going to win 35 games. We're going to lose 35 games. And, you know, 12 games are going to go. We're going to lose 12 games in overtime or whatever. However you want to get to 82 games, we're going to be, you know, a 500 club. I think they have some critical pieces to make a push and go deep into the playoffs.
I agree.
But they need to make some additional moves. So I think it, more so than maybe any offseason, this is going to – we're at a fork in the road, to use another analogy, but I do think it is relevant. And we are at a fork in the road. We're either going to choose to go right or to go left. And one way is the end of the beginning. The other way is the beginning of the end, at least for Jets 2.1.
Well said. Could not agree more. And that was my thought after the announcement today, and then just projecting my thoughts moving forward. That was my concern. I'm not sure that the sense of urgency is there for the Jets organization. I'm going to reserve judgment because we have draft and expansion draft moves to be made if they're going to be made. So it's a bit of a TBD, but that was well said.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Now, on that sour note, do we want to do some trivia?
Let's
do some trivia.
Okay, so I started off scouring the internet for something expansion draft related and went down some deep rabbit holes, but I thought, well, no, let's keep this a bit on the surface. So Logan Stanley, and we referenced it, is a tall man. And so, you know, there's the Charas and the Myers. But my question to you is, in NHL recorded history, who is the shortest player ever to play, and what was his height?
Well, Okay, so at the risk of having
this
too much
hard,
dead,
and I apologize.
Dead air, I know it's probably someone from like the Montreal Maroons in 1923.
It's like 1925.
I think Gerby, the current guy, I think he's 5'5". So I'm going to say...
Look at you.
I'm saying the guy's going to be like... It's going to be Butch McCloskey from the Montreal Maroons, 1923, and he was 5'4". Butch McCloskey.
Roy Waters, he was a goalie, and he was 5'3". But you're right. You nailed the era and the aura of what I was going for there. Quick subsection B to this, and I actually don't know the answer to this, but I just thought about it because who do you think is the shortest Jet player ever to play?
Ooh, good question. Again, at the risk of too much dead air, I'm just going to say Doug Smale.
Okay. So, and that's probably right. I was thinking Stapleton. He's listed at 5'9". I met him. My buddy owns a restaurant, and him and Tanner Glass and some of the and Dumba came to the restaurant after hours. And he showed up with a Winnipeg harem of about 7 lovely ladies in tow. And he is, if he's taller than 5'5", I would be shocked. He is not 5'9". And you can see it out in the ice. And he was really putting on a clinic. And he enjoyed the, you know, my buddy was, you know, it was free food and beverages throughout. And he utilized the entire space of the restaurant. I'll just put it that way.
Good for him.
Yeah.
I like him a little bit more now.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's my trivia question for you. It might be pretty straightforward. You might know it, but there was a bit of a twist, and I'll get to what I thought was the twist when I came across this. When the Jets re-entered the NHL prior to the 1979 season, they were allowed to keep or protect 3 players from their WHA roster, 1 forward, 1 defenseman, and a goalie. Who were the 3 players the Jets protected?
Oh.
And the rub is, I thought it was only 2, but it turns out it was 3. I knew I wouldn't have got this because I thought it was only 2, and I have the 2 names in my head, but it was actually 3. Who were the 3? 1 forward, 1 defenseman.
I just looked at this, too, and I didn't see any of this in terms of who they protected.
Well, it's my public sector research skills. I can get...
I was going to say...
I got into the dark
and
web.
It's not Hall. It's not...
No.
No, I got nothing. You got to give it to me.
Okay, so the forward, Morris Lukowich.
Oh.
The defenseman, Scott Campbell. The very active Twitter, in the Twitterverse, Scott Campbell.
Right, yeah. Right.
So those are the 2 I would have got, because I only thought it was 2. But they also got to protect a goalie. Marcus Mattsson.
Oh.
Scott Campbell, Morris Lukowich, and Marcus Mattsson were the 3 players. Imagine that. They're coming in, and they lost Kent Nielsen. Kent Nielsen was on their roster, and he went and played for, I think it was the Atlanta Flames for a couple seasons, and then moved on. And so they had some decent players that they weren't allowed to keep when they came back into the, or when they came into the NHL in 1979. So... Yeah, a very different time, and I thought it was interesting, not only from a Jets perspective, but, you know, they did have to pay an expansion fee. I think it was $6 million at the time they had to pay to enter the league. Now, I don't think that necessarily correlates directly with the $600 million now, but certainly you're getting a much more for your $600 million now than, you know, the...
You were back in the day, yeah.
Yeah, you were back in the day, so... All right.
Nice.
Last call.
I like that one. Last call.
Hey, guys. Just letting you know it's last call. Almost time to wrap it up.
So not much, yep. I guess. Is there something? I was just going to say we're probably do a podcast after the expansion and entry draft. The expansion draft is Wednesday, this upcoming Wednesday. The entry draft occurs Friday and Saturday. So that's July 23rd and 24th. And we'll probably let the dust settle on that for about 24 hours. And we might do another podcast and hopefully we're in a better place. That sound like a plan to you, Mike?
That sounds like a plan.
Any other concluding thoughts? I'll leave the last word to you.
No, and really silly, but we've said the word Kraken a lot on this podcast, and I can. Cool name, man. It's really grown on me. So yeah. kudos to them. I hope they're terrible and they don't get to mellow, yes. But great name.
I agree. So, fellow travelers, that's it for this episode of the podcast. Thanks for joining us in the Airport Lounge, the official Face-Off Hockey Network podcast for the Winnipeg Jets. Check us out on Twitter at Airport Lounge 55, on the interweb at thefhn.net, with all episodes also available on Apple Podcasts. Be sure to come back next week to the Airport Lounge because the first round is always on us. Until then, go Jets go. Said we'd be forever, said it never died. How could you love me and leave me and never say goodbye?